Playback on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Dublin Airport's Airport Club. Make travel effortless with lounge access, stress-free parking, fast-track security and exclusive duty-free savings.
Good morning. Now, a big imposing house, divided loyalties, hidden agendas and a cutthroat environment where only a select few make it to the very end. I'm talking, of course, about the presidential election race. Betty phoned Lifeline and spoke to John Cook, who asked her if she was looking forward to seeing posters of candidates.
Not particularly, John. No. I really don't think it does any good whatsoever. It's a bit like a governmental Tinder, you know, sort of swipe right, swipe left. And
governmental Tinder. We've heard it from you first, Betty. I hope you get that
there
rolling
you are,
soon.
John. Not that I know a whole lot about Tinder now.
Betty, that's a whole other story. Do you want to tell me about that?
That's another story. No. I'm married for 47 years to the same lad, so let's leave that there.
I'm thinking you didn't bother with Tinder, so, but...
No. Adamstown Ballroom.
There was no swiping left or right there or looking the other way?
No. You just got up and got on with it. And
would you have managed it in Tinder? I often think I wouldn't manage nowadays at all.
Oh, Jesus, no. I'd get a dog.
On the first night back for a late debate, the presidential race had Colm wrestling with a few demons.
Now allow us a laboured metaphor for the three-wheeler presidential race. Three-wheeler so far, unless something changes before tomorrow. Fans of The Omen will know that noise in the background. Remember the scene with little Damien on the squeaky trike, hurtling down the hall towards the stool supporting a woman in grave danger. Now, whether or not the current tricycle will trundle over the hopes of the last remaining aspiring candidate and leave her hopes shattered depends on whether another three votes can be found before the noon deadline tomorrow.
While the nomination deadline got ever closer, Barry Lenehan was making comparisons with Kerry royalty.
Yes, it would appear with the clock ticking that Maria Steen may need to conjure magic akin to David Clifford in order to get the 20 Oireachtas names necessary at this point.
And after all that, Maria Steen came up just short, leaving Catherine Connolly, Heather Humphreys and Jim Gavin to battle it out. Liveline listeners were not impressed.
The basic issue is that they have stitched up the county councils and they have got their own people in, and to hell with anybody else who might have wanted to get a look in. And that's the whole sadness of it all, and I'm going to spoil my vote. I'm seriously thinking of spoiling my vote.
Maria Steen has been denied a place on the ballot and we have been denied the choice to vote for her. There's just not enough choice. It looks like that the political parties have manipulated this and they have made a choice for us, and that's not democratic.
This all gave the late debate resident DJ a chance to pay tribute to all of those who never quite made it to the start line.
If I thought that I could be of benefit to the Irish people, and maybe more importantly, if I thought I could be a voice, a voice of the Irish people, right now I don't think they have a voice.
Over the last several months and weeks, and in gaining momentum, people have been asking me if I would run, if I would go to the park.
I was asked in probably February, would I be up for the conversation? I feel like I'm saying that all the time. And
has
that
anyone
was
had
it.
That conversation yet?
That conversation hasn't happened at all.
Are you still open to that conversation?
I mean, like, I'm open to talking to people.
Rarely has the political consensus seemed more oppressive or detached from the wishes and desires of the public.
Today, Ireland, I am outside these gates of these appointed officials, but as your head of state, you empower me to enter these buildings on your behalf. A president face to face with government officials.
I wouldn't change anything. The outcome wasn't what we wanted. Obviously devastated that we didn't get the four nominations. It would have been great, but I wouldn't change anything during the process.
Oh, just four more weeks. Hang in there, everyone. After several weeks and some of the most intense television scenes since Miley was unfaithful to Biddy, the winners of The Traitors Season 1 were crowned. Faithful's Eoin, Kelly and Vanessa took home the cash prize, having defeated Traitors Ben and Nick. The cast attended a watch party in Dublin and Morning Ireland reporter Sheila Nocton went along.
the girls in particular, but Kelly very specifically. She is my girl and I would just love to see her taken because I really think that she can.
Oh, I'm absolutely rooting for the girls. Come on, team girls. I'm all about the girlies.
Oh, God. After that portrayal, I think I have to go with the girls, but I would love to see the boys win, but I'm going to go for the girls.
Traitors cast members Amy, Mark, Christine and Faye there on who they were rooting for. Irish Traitors season had everything from funeral sandwiches to Siobhan McSweeney, Gaelga and, of course, the Podfather.
The experience has been the best experience of my life. The whole experience of being in the castle, the stress, the thinking, the minding what you say, looking around you, keeping an eye on what's going on, it has been absolutely excellent.
Did you feel the writing was on the wall the night that you were leaving? Did you expect it?
Strangely enough, going in I didn't really, but I thought it was coming the night before and it hadn't.
Let's return to last night's big moment. The winner or ers? Suspense filled the room at the watch party as everyone stared at the screen waiting for Vanessa to speak.
Oh, beautiful
guys. Congratulations to our winners, Brian, Kelly and Vanessa.
And there you have it, not one but three winners. Vanessa, Kelly and Eoin will split the €42,900 and they're the queens of the Traitors Ireland Series 1. Here's the reaction of their fellow Traitors and Faithfuls, Wilkin, Andrew and Nina.
I was excited, I jumped up and down, I was like, yes.
The right players won. I think it would have been the same way any other way because they all played the game and it's a hard game to win, guys.
Yes, the right people won. Who wouldn't want a faithful to win? The girls came out on top. Faithfuls always win. Truth always wins. So, yeah, come on here and go for it.
Later, the winners were on with Dermot and all were coming to terms with what life would be like as Ireland's newest celebrities. Vanessa, in particular, wanted to pay tribute to her community in Tramore, which helped support her while she grew up in direct provision.
Obviously, the cultural and racial climate in Ireland right now is very heated. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into the economical or the social factors that have to do with direct provision because honestly, I cannot speak on those. What I did want to share is a story of overcoming, a story that my community in Tramore came together and helped this little girl randomly, and that has changed my entire life.
I think she's amazing and so strong.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, honestly, I come to tears a lot because I think I am so blessed and I would honestly be nothing without the people of Tramore, especially Tramore AFC. And they have been the people to make me the person that I am. I'm so sorry that I'm here. I just keep crying. I'm so sorry. But honestly, like, yeah, I can't share any spotlight without bringing the people who made me the person that I am. And that's the reason why I mentioned that community. And I mentioned that because socially, economically, I don't know what's going on. I can't speak on that. But all I know is how it changed my life and the people in Ireland that have been so amazing to me for the last 23, 24 years, you know?
Well said. And I think it definitely is reaching people and reached us all on telly as well.
Yeah, so I need to stop crying. I'm so sorry.
Listen, it's a show that's based on real emotion. I mean, what does the show mean for you guys now, Ben and Nick? I mean, we're seeing it now. It's very fresh for everybody else. You've been out of the castle for a little while. So how do you think things are going to change for you guys?
One word, bromance. Will be.
I think it's hard to.
It's like a word.
We obviously don't come from the background of like TV or radio or any of that stuff, so it's still hard to kind of see yourself like in that and people recognizing you and like your life maybe changing. But me personally, I just think it's going to go back to normality. I'm going to go back to me 9 to 5, back to work, and yeah, I don't know. I find it hard to think otherwise.
I don't know how it's going to go back to normal because like.
So, are you in estate agent?
Estate
Nick?
Agent, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's
how. How will you ever be able to walk around and show someone a gaff?
Like, I have to answer a couple of questions about the girls. Maybe I don't know.
It's
a lovely sitting room, and yes, they were nice. Okay.
But like, it's not as if the queues to view a property need to be longer these days. Do you know what I mean? Given the massive rating success, is there any doubt television executives aren't already licking their lips at the prospect of season 2? Gráinne McAleer, who commissioned Kite Entertainment to make the series, spoke to Mary Wilson.
We don't often get
shares like that and figures like that for as long as we do.
Yeah.
I like to think it's like 12 All-Ireland finals or 12 France, and numbers wise, not anything else.
Because I know the last share, 58% of people watching television in this country were watching Traitors.
Yeah,
and at 70, the one time. It's so rare these days to have a television moment that we're all sharing at the same time.
Which is just lovely. And 79% of 15 to 35 year olds watching television were watching The Traitors.
Amazing, isn't
which
it?
Which is great figures.
And you're doing it again.
Absolutely. Yeah, we will. It hasn't all been finalised, yeah. But I think if you were a betting person, you'd say we'll definitely be doing this again.
And celebrities, Traitors, perhaps?
You never know, but I have no idea about celebrity traitors, but Traitors in one guise or another will be coming back.
Someone with a bone to pick with RTE was Noel, who phoned Liveline, and he was unhappy that RTE seems to have moved Waterford.
I noticed that the new graphic on RTE there, particularly 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock news, somebody decided to put Waterford City underneath the Cumberland Mountains when they're doing the graphic. We seem to be the only town or city on the graphic that's put not where it's supposed to be.
Waterford has moved.
Well, someone's up to moving it, yeah.
Noel, as our correspondent right now, right here on the ground in Waterford, I presume you can confirm for me Waterford hasn't gone anywhere.
No, we're still here. No, we're still here. We're still the oldest city in Ireland. We're still here, yeah. Even though we don't get much of a mention now, our national broadcaster could, the least they could do is get the positioning of it right on the weather map. It's important to see your own locality, especially on the national broadcaster, I believe. So
you've noticed just recently, is it something amiss?
Well, it was when the new graphic came on, which is fantastic, actually. It's very good, but it's when they put up the graphic, like you have Dublin, Cork, Limerick, say Waterford, but Waterford is the only one I can see that's in the wrong place geographically. But
and it annoyed you. Sitting down to watch the Traitors last night, was it? And you felt like you'd been betrayed yourself.
Yeah, Traitors wouldn't be my cup of tea. But I was. Yeah, my wife is sick of me listening to it.
So she wasn't as annoyed as you, is it?
I'll offload on someone else. No, she really doesn't bother her either.
She gave you a short shrift. She said, call Liveline there.
She said, just stop talking to me about it.
You got in touch. You're so annoyed you got in touch with Mate Aaron.
I got in touch with Mate Aaron, yeah, and they told me it was an RTE problem.
In a response I have from RTE, they say that they have expanded the range of locations and it's to reflect the widest possible range of communities, they say. It's not working, though, for you, I know, Noel, you're saying.
But yeah, that's a great response, but just put Waterford back where we are, like, you know what I mean? I mean... As I said to you earlier on, being under the Cumberland Mountains is a fantastic place to be, but the city is not under the Cumberland Mountains. It's down.
Okay. Well, the good news for you here, Noel, is that if your wife may not want to listen to you, but we are listening to you here at Liveline. And in response to your query, RTE says that specifically with regard to Waterford, there was an issue whereby in one of our bulletin templates, the graphic system on some forecasts identifying Waterford City to be located in the geographic centre of the county and not the city's actual latitude and longitude. This error, I'm told, was caused by an incorrect database entry, and as soon as we're made aware of it, we sought to resolve it. And they say the issue has now been resolved, Noel.
I'll sleep easy now if it's resolved.
I've a feeling you'll be watching very closely.
It'll make me day, absolutely make my day. You know what I mean? All we need now is the airport, and we'll be laughing. I just think RTE should be able to get Waterford right.
And it would seem that as soon as they were made aware of the issue, by you, Noel, it seems, they sought to resolve it. You could tell your wife you were right anyway.
Well, she mightn't believe me, but there you go. It's nice to be right once in a blue moon. What did they say about a stop clock is right twice a day, isn't it?
Last weekend, Brendan O'Connor met Oscar-winning actor Brenda Fricker to speak about her new memoir. Some of the material dealt with difficult themes, and this may not be suitable for younger ears.
How are you, Brenda?
I'm all right. I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Good days and bad days.
Yeah. Is today a good day or a bad day?
No, it's a bad day.
Okay. Anything to do with me, or is it just a bad day?
It's you, actually. Okay. No, it's just a bad day.
Why did I ask? I feel there are a lot of myths about you, right? And one of them now, and this will feed into it, that we're here with you now and we're in the house and you're on / in the bed. People talk of you as kind of reclusive or semi-reclusive or anything. Are you?
Am I?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I'm good with my own company. And I am reclusive, yeah.
For how long?
Long spells, yeah.
And will you emerge back out at times? Will you emerge back out at some stage?
I find it difficult, Brendan, to leave the house sometimes. And that's a personal thing to say to you, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a throwback to depression when you're locked in and you can't get out.
There's a lot of pain in the book and there's a lot of joy as well. So I was thinking about pain and joy. So looking back at 80 now, did the joy outweigh the pain for you? Did the pain outweigh the joy?
Well, the pain was like medical, if you like, if you can call depression medical.
Yeah.
When something happens to you that you have no control over. So you're mentally locked into a place where you're not happy. You know, that is a sad bit. But I'm actually a lovely person when I'm not sad.
Brenda also spoke about her upbringing, including experiencing significant violence at home.
You had a rough start. So Bina, your mother, was a teacher and she was quite violent to you, was she?
Very. I wonder why. She was a nice person, a nice woman.
Yeah.
A popular teacher. And it was only me. I was the only person she slashed around or kicked around, but never understood it. There's no logic to it. There's no warning. I didn't do something wrong and she beat me, you know. It just came from nowhere.
You spent your summers then down in Kerry, Gnívegullo, was it?
Mm.
With your aunt Noni.
She was an amazing woman. Really amazing. Yeah. Full of love. And she had nothing.
As Brenda detailed many challenges in her personal life, she was starkly honest about her views on life and death. And again, just a warning, this material may be triggering for some listeners.
When you were 14, you had a very bad accident, knocked you off your bike. The injuries sound pretty horrific, were they?
Yeah, they were terrible. Yeah, face first through a windscreen.
Funny, we've talked about a lot of intense things there, but that's the first time now you've been a bit rattled or kind of wincing at the memory, is it?
That's not a nice one.
Yeah.
It certainly changed a lot of things for me.
You made numerous suicide attempts. Did you want to die?
I do now, this minute.
Do you?
Mm. I can't remember not wanting to die.
All the time?
Pretty well, yeah.
But you seem as if you're engaged with this, that there is life here, and there is this room you're in looks as if it's the room of someone who cares about the world, who hasn't given up.
I'm trying to say it cleanly.
Yeah,
and it's okay. A very difficult thing for people
I know,
to
I'm
understand.
Yeah.
That if I say I would prefer, if I could die quietly tonight, I would be very happy. But I won't. With my luck, I will live to be 110. So there's no chance of me dying tonight.
And you will keep going.
I will keep going.
Back to the myths about you. I suppose there is another kind of thing that people say about you. As if there was this other career that you could have had if you were more straightforward.
I never played the game, I don't think. I stayed a step outside the game.
Yeah.
But I was there. I knew the rules. Fame is awful.
What was the worst thing about it?
Everything. It's a horrible thing.
Did winning the Oscar change things?
I tried to write that book without the word Oscar in
prize.
It.
Did winning the prize change things?
No, I'm not telling you not to say it here. It was just a piece of discipline not to mention it.
Yes.
I had to write a book about my life before winning anything.
Yeah.
Because people identify me so much with that bloody thing, you know. It's not that big a thing, but it's so public. And it's televised all over the world and people see it and they know it.
You, as people would be getting, you write about a lot of challenging things in the book. You were raped twice, Brenda, and you write of the first one, "This incident, more than any other, changed me. I was broken now and I would remain so."
Yeah. Well, it's impossible to describe what a rape does to you, except that you do feel broken. I can't find words to describe it. I mean, everybody tries to describe it. You can't. And I don't think a man can understand it. But it ruins a part of your life forever. Sure, I couldn't make love for years. As I told you when I got married, poor Barry had to put up with it. Had to have a lot of patience with me.
Yeah, but I think this is Barry Davis. He was a British film and TV and theatre director as well.
All of them, yeah.
He did help you heal.
Oh, he was wonderful.
Yeah.
For a whole year after we got married, he was so gentle and understanding and wooed me back to confidence, I suppose, because I was fascinated by the man and deeply in love and trusted him and all that. So, yes, he cured me of that.
Yeah.
So I was able to run around and have sex with everybody after that. You know, it looked so serious.
This is tricky territory for me now, like, as to how...
Don't be nervous now, Brendan. Right.
Was Barry, was that the big love of your life?
Ah, yeah, that was, definitely, yeah. Yeah, he was wonderful. Yeah. And the drink got him. The drink got him. The tragedy.
Yeah.
Got my sister as well. Terrible sad, isn't it, when that happens? Come on, tell me something that's happy.
I'll tell you something happy, though. You're an incredible person. Like, you're the most... You are... When you said charming there, you are the most charming, magnetic, like, intelligent, kind of grounded, authentic person and everything. I don't understand why you want to die all the time. You seem like somebody who lives this life very well.
Well, I suppose I do live that part of it well. I mean, I've learned how to behave socially. But when you're all gone...
What'll happen?
Well, I won't be laughing, let's put it that way.
The extraordinary Brenda Fricker, interviewed sensitively by Brendan O'Connor. And if any of that material impacted you, there's a list of resources at rte.ie/helplines. Someone else making a home visit this week was Pat O'Mahony, who called to Padraig O'Riordan in West Cork to talk about his music collection for Pat's On The Record series, which goes out on RTE Gold on Sundays at 6 p.m. Pat began by asking Padraig about his method for collecting records.
Well, I'm afraid the biggest quality the records have at this stage, the vinyl, is the dust. I kind of fell out of love with vinyl. Well, you see, the problem with the vinyl was, if you left it out on the table or something, that the sun would get it and it would be warped, and then you'd be cursing and swearing. And then the bloody thing would get scratched so often.
Yeah.
And somebody'd sit on one now and again or anything like that. And, like, I wasn't precious about them.
What's your storage system? How do you file records?
Wherever there's space.
You don't put them in alphabetical order?
Well, for
order.
Example, when you see the books here, there's a few books in the room here, I know where they all are. And I had the misfortune to ask my future daughter-in-law, who has a lot of experience with books and so on, and my son to see would they rearrange the things in a sensible fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't find half the books.
You don't know where anything is.
Because they're put sensibly in order and I can't.
When you were growing up, you would be suggesting music for each other.
Like we went through various phases. Like there was the Roy Cooder phase, which lasted a couple of years, and any time a new album came out, I get it, or somebody get it.
Can I ask you, where are you now in your head listening to that?
I don't know.
Is it a sad tune to listen to?
Why do you differentiate between sadness and happiness?
This is about your late mother, so I would assume there's a sadness.
People listening to the music can judge for themselves. I don't calculate, I don't think about it. It just comes and it's there. Like you'd stick a ladle into a soup pot.
Right.
And my life experience puts the ingredients in the pot. And as I take the stuff out, it comes. So I see, there's only two things in life that are important. Truth and love. Everything else is secondary.
Padraig O'Riordan speaking with Pat O'Mahony. Now, part of its appeal is that you never quite know what musical port John Creedon is going to call at. This week, for example, he played The Curlew's Cry by Barry Kerr.
The Winterfell have left us. They haven't come this year. No midnight swans are calling. Those lovers lost, I fear. No plover is a nesting. The bog has gone to plough. The crying of a curlew is but a memory now.
Wonderful. I think the man is brilliant. I know he's won a couple of awards along the way. He's from County Armagh, there or thereabouts. No, County Armagh. And in fact, we had Denny Larkin last night also from the Armagh border with Monaghan. That's where she grew up and spent most of her time in Belfast. But Barry is just a fabulous musician, a multi-instrumentalist. If I'm not mistaken, he's also a painter. He's a visual artist as well. Barry Kerr, yeah, from Armagh. And the new album is called Curlew's Cry, and that's what you heard just there. Funny thing, speaking of the curlew, I think I wouldn't be alone when I say it's one of the most plaintive yet beautiful sounds ever, especially at dusk when it's almost dark and you're not quite sure where they are, but you can hear the curlew. Beautiful, beautiful sound. And actually today I had a bit of a breakthrough. I've been hearing a bird here in the city, and I guessed it was a bird of prey, but not the usual screech you might get from a sparrowhawk or a kestrel or something. And I was wondering, what is that? And I looked up today just at the right time, and sure enough, soaring way above me with those brown upper feathers and kind of whitish underwing, a buzzard. There's no shortage of them in Ireland now, but got a fine bird with broad wings and a wingspan of, what, 4 or 5 feet even. But I won't forget it from here on in. Don't ask me to do it now because I couldn't even remember what it was. Above the city's hubbub, I managed to spot him there today and hear him as well, or her. And it was a joy to behold. Going to press on with something entirely different. What about this one? No, no, no. Yes, yes, yes.
From Armagh to the skies over Cork and on to Kingston in Jamaica, Creedon's audio atlas remains borderless. Someone else whose mind is known to wander is comic Dylan Moran, and he was on with Dermot to talk about connectivity and a recent stage role.
Well, how do you feel about everything being amplified all of the time? I mean, what are you going to feel about it? You're going to feel like your ears are sore. That's all you can feel. T.S. Eliot said, till human voices wake us and we drown. That's it. You don't get to hear yourself anymore. And then you don't want to spend time with yourself anymore, because when you do, you go, hang on, this thing isn't noisy. What? This is no good.
It's funny you're talking about ailments as you get older. I was watching our brilliant athlete, Kate O'Connor, throw the javelin over the weekend. Part of me was getting sympathy pains in my right shoulder. I was going, if I threw that thing, I would make bits of my rotator cuff.
I feel sympathetic pain watching anybody move around.
You had your Shakespearean debut. You played Touchstone in As You Like It, which I think was a bit of a copycat act by you. Not sure if you're aware. I played Touchstone in 1989 in the Bell Table in Limerick. Obviously, you were heavily inspired by that. That's why you've been working with Ray Fiennes on your own production of it.
It was a ton of work. It was more like real work than I've ever done in my life. Mm. In that kind of, you know, labouring way, because you turn up early, you work hard all day, focused on one thing. But with Shakespeare, obviously, you know, you have to be on point, as it were.
On Drive Time, Cormac channeled his inner Laurence Olivier and spoke to English teacher Conor Murphy, who believes Shakespeare should be optional in second level.
How doth are you? I mean, that's completely a terrible attempt. How are you, Conor? You're very welcome to the programme.
I dost be doing okay, I think.
Now, tell me this, right? Is it really your opinion, and I've read your piece, that you think Shakespeare should be optional?
Yes, definitely. I was teaching Ozymandias the other day, and Ozymandias stands on a pedestal and says, "My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair." And then we have a conversation about tyranny and about hubris and it leads on to, you know, should we elevate one man above all else and say how great he is and big, huge statues of him? And then in a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to that class and say, "But by the way, Shakespeare is somebody we should elevate and put on a pedestal. And I just think it's time for Shakespeare to scoot over a little bit on the pedestal and invite some more people up with him.
But surely William Shakespeare is on that pedestal because of the breadth of what he's written and the themes, and it's universal. It falls in the story of Shakespeare in its various guises, how he's written. You can see it in threads in politics and in business and in our everyday lives, really. That's his genius, no?
Well, a lot of other people had that genius as well. I keep mentioning John McGarren. He has that genius as well, where he talks about people and he talks about the human condition and he talks about love and relationships and all those kind of things in just as deep a fashion as Shakespeare.
Why throw it out when it is fantastic and it has stood the test of time?
So I love Shakespeare. I'm not saying to get rid of him. I'm not saying off you go now, William, you're done.
Effectively,
I'm saying, well, the idea would be, it's a sad state of affairs if we think that nothing great has been written in the last 400 years, that it all kind of stopped.
No Shakespeare in second level. They might as well get rid of pagan algebra while they're at it. Now, Shakespeare was no stranger to the language of love, but love doesn't come cheap these days, as Maura Fey found out when she dived into the world of wedding content creators.
We are gathered here today to tell you about a new guest appearing at Irish weddings. It's not the photographer, not the videographer, but someone hired to film the day to put on Instagram and TikTok, to put the post together.
So, Claire, a content creator is someone whose job is to capture the candid behind-the-scenes footage and make weddings look instantly Instagram ready. People I've been speaking to estimate that there are now 50 wedding content creators working in Ireland.
I suppose we kind of blend in as a guest. Like, we're not supposed to really be seen that much throughout, like, you know, a photographer and videographer quite up there at the front. Our role, I suppose, is kind of blend in, not get in the way of them.
So have you been able to find out why so many couples now are keen to have a content creator at the wedding?
Well, for some couples, the appeal is very simple. They'd rather scroll through their wedding day on Instagram than dig out the DVD a couple of years later.
How did the traditional photographers feel about all this, about the wedding content creators, Maura?
It's a bit of a mixed bag, Claire. So some would prefer not to have a content creator there because it can lead to a duplication of shots, like the bride and groom getting ready.
There's a reality series in this, Maura. Wedding battles, battles on the day between the creators.
Love it.
Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married.
Bob Geldof was in reflective mood when speaking to Brendan about the 50th anniversary of the founding of his band, the Boomtown Rats.
Pop music is a really powerful thing. You grew up listening to your bands. People today are growing up listening to their bands. And there's brilliant bands coming out of Ireland now, you know, controversial, causing a fuss, just like Sinead and U2 did. You know, we use this powerful medium, exactly like Elvis and Little Richard did, to make a fuss, to create a noise, and to talk about things that aren't just pop, but about articulating what the hell is going on with you and within society at that moment. That's what makes it a sort of a living, powerful minor art form.
Shock the young crowd by painting a little picture of the Ireland 50 years ago that the Boomtown Rats came out of.
The truth is, it was awful. It was awful. And I apologise to people of my generation who had a different experience. But the first thing to remember is that economically, it was zero. I mean, absolute zero. There was nothing for our generation. And, you know, if a government cannot give its younger generation a future, then it's almost a treason. But that in context, inflation in the UK in 1975, 76, 77 was 27%. There's no point. There's no point in having a job. There's no point in trying to get food in the shop because the prices will have just become ridiculous. New York, the richest city in the richest country in the world, declared bankruptcy. So this was going on.
Was Ireland uniquely oppressive for
yes,
young people?
Yes, it was. I mean, that's the word you're using. There was this great sort of social claustrophobia. And it came about, I think, and this is people go Geldof crapping on again. There was intense political corruption. Listen, Brendan, the only job I could get was, what's it, in a slaughterhouse. The only thing, when we started playing and very rapidly, you know, this crowd built up around us, very different to the local sense. So when we arrived in the UK, we weren't out of joint with what was going on here. There was, as we now know, this general cultural shift. They called it punks, but actually it was just a generation of young people who were offered no future, and they were determined to make one.
Brendan also asked Bob Geldof about speaking to Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin, asking him rather innocently, could he have seen himself become their candidate, following in the footsteps of someone like, oh, I don't know, say, Eamon de Valera, perhaps?
shut up, you know. I have a view about de Valera, believe me, you know. It might not
so
be
if Fianna Fáil hadn't had a candidate at that point and they said, yeah, you're a candidate, you would have gone for it, yeah?
Probably. I'd have done well, Brendan,
I think you would have done all right.
I couldn't do the county council hurdle race. I really couldn't do it. But honestly, Brendan, like, you know, you get deluded. It's flattering to be asked. And then you think, do I want that? Do I really want that? So here's the thing. I think the Irish are very ambivalent about me. I think the county councils would have been a nightmare for me. The Shinners would never, ever in 1,000 years put a vote for Bob Geldof. Oh, I'd have enjoyed the scrap. I'd have enjoyed the debates. I'd take anyone on. I don't mind.
How do you feel about Ireland now?
In the history of countries, the change that happened to Ireland was so of an instant, was so radical, was so brilliantly achieved.
So Bob Geldof, the greatest president we never had, thank you so much. The album, The First 50 Years, Songs of Boomtown Glory, is out now. And listen, despite everyone electrified by the last 45 minutes of Bob's conversation, go back and listen. Go and listen to that album, I would say. And any young people, go and listen to that album. It's as fresh, those songs are as fresh as they ever were. And it's a fantastic body of work. Bob Geldof, thank you so much.
Just how useful is it to be born into a musical family? Renowned Dylan Piper Sean McKeown grew up in a very musical household in Dublin. But as he told Aoife on The Rolling Wave, he wasn't always enamoured with the idea of becoming a piper.
Myself and my siblings were extremely lucky to grow up in a house that had constant music, traditional music being played. When we were growing up, you know, my father plays the Uilleann pipes, so it was just kind of a natural thing. We were going to play the Uilleann pipes, whether we liked it or not. Like, I think I mentioned Robbie Hannon earlier there. I remember Robbie came to stay with us when he was recording his solo album. Myself and my brother would have been fairly young, I'd say 6 or 7 at the time, and he came up the stairs with the pipes case in his hand, and myself and Connor, my brother, were probably in the middle of a very intense game of Super Mario or something on the computer, and he said, well, how are you lads? And like something out of The Omen or something, I slowly turned my head and just pointed at the pipes case and said, see them, we hate them. So it definitely wasn't a love at first sight thing for us.
Sean McKeown there in his version of Building Up and Tearing England Down. A new report launched this week highlighting that 2 in 5 men in Ireland die prematurely from largely preventable causes. On Late Debate, Thomas Gould spoke openly about his recent health battles and the need in general for men to take more control of their well-being.
2 years ago, at the night of the budget, I got sepsis, but made all the votes. Last year, then, the night of the budget, I got sick and I had bowel cancer. I had an operation to remove a tumour. I went through 6 months of chemotherapy. Things are going well at the moment.
Yes, you'll be staying out of the be staying away from the budget this year, will you?
So hopefully we'll have a better budget. But it's I had no symptoms. I just had chronic fatigue, and I think a lot of men are very. And I know myself. You have a tendency to drive on. You know what I mean? I knew I was sick. I should have probably been at the hospital weeks, if not months earlier, but I was saying, sure, tiredness, I'm probably doing long hours, you know the way it is.
And maybe men need to kind of lose their fear of the old rubber glove check in the doctor's surgery.
And listen, this,
it's got to be done at some point.
And the thing about it, it's nothing, but I don't know, does it go back to Irish men being the quiet type, right? Not speaking for myself, obviously, you know, but a lot of people, they just need to go in and get it done. And yeah, the relief.
Get the finger out, so to speak.
Or in the thing.
Richard, I don't know who you've had your own scares.
Yeah, I've had a couple of scares there now. And the biggest thing I see is not listening to the warnings. Yeah. I've had overturned a car. My son said to me, actually, I missed 3 of his birthdays. And the 3 accidents actually happened on, 2 accidents actually happened on his birthday. One was he overturned the car coming, going down to his birthday, and ended up being hospitalised for a week afterwards. And 12 months later, I ended up getting a mini stroke. But the biggest thing was we were
on his birthday as well.
I was hospitalised on his birthday as well with a mini stroke.
So his birthdays are to you what budgets are to Thomas Gould sitting beside you, yeah.
But the one thing is for men, and females are brilliant because they all talk. And they're great to share a problem or have a problem and talk. Men seem as it's a weakness to speak and to talk to someone else and share a problem. Now, I don't have that problem, but I know an awful lot of people that do. And it's not a weakness to talk about a problem. It's not a weakness if it's even mental health. It's a strength. When you go talk to somebody, it's a strength. I've lost friends of mine, and it puts questions onto the people, what could I have done better? If there's one message from here tonight, is men, it is not a weakness to talk, it's a strength, and get out and meet people.
This week saw Mary Wilson and Áine Lawler's time on Morning Ireland coming to an end, making this the last time we'd be hearing this introduction.
This is Morning Ireland on RT Radio 1 and the RT News Channel with Áine Lawler and Mary Wilson.
Des Cahill was given the task to try and somehow sum up their careers when he arrived into studio at the end of Wednesday's show.
Forgive us now, but Mary
so
and Áine...
We have another item to
and
do.
And this is, I know, forgive me interrupting, but I just want to take a couple of minutes, moments before the programme ends, to acknowledge two wonderful broadcasters who today are presenting Morning Ireland for the last time. Now, Mary Wilson ends a wonderful career, magnificent career, more than 35 years with RTE, top level journalism, and still looking as youthful as a girl who came to college from Drangan in Tipperary. And Áine Lawler,
so kind,
who's worked on so many programmes in RTE. Áine will still be on RTE with The Week in Politics and the presidential election. But you've 20-odd years on this programme.
I was actually missing you this morning, walking into you in the dark.
Well, I'll miss you too, I'll tell you that. I've no one else to gossip with. But, Mary, a sign of how much you're appreciated. The Taoiseach has tweeted wishing you both the very best for all you've done.
Over the last few days, people have asked me again and again, how do you feel? And I actually didn't know how I felt. And it forced me to think about it. I'm sure they've asked you as well, Áine. And how I feel? I feel incredibly lucky to have had 35 wonderful years in this organisation, to work with amazing editors and reporters and broadcast coordinators and producers and sound engineers who keep us on air day after day, you know. So it has been absolutely fantastic and, yeah, incredibly lucky. And just thank you to the listeners, you know, who have continued to tune in. They tell us when we do something right. More importantly, they tell us when we do something wrong.
And the number of days we're here going, oh gosh, the news is so grim today. I feel really sorry for anyone listening. So you try to make it. So thank you to people who do tune in every day, because it can be grim. We try to do our
well. Look, at I said get somebody better than me to do it, but it was because I've been part of the team, and with you two. We've come through our careers together here.
I told our series editor, John Burke, to keep this low key today.
Well, that's where they got me. I wish you'd said that a bit differently.
I think all three of us are kind of here. Yeah.
And there's another legend, Brian Kenny. But look, at on behalf of all our colleagues, not just in Morning Ireland, but across RTE, and with so many, the listeners, I want to say on behalf of our Director General, Kevin Backhurst, is here, all of the editors, we have former editors here, correspondents, the reporters, and the young reporters, because you two have been fantastic to the young reporters. Thank you for your professionalism, your dedication, your commitment to the important role in public service broadcasting, most of all, for being lovely colleagues and your two sound women, decent women. So thank you.
Des Cahill, thank you very much. We're right out of time. Take a break.
Till next time.